Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, March 27th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, State Senate Democrats release their budget targets. St. Cloud school officials say they have a plan to deal with discrimination complaints from Somali students, and business groups object to new union organizing rules. Minnesota Senate Democrats released their spending priorities for the next 2 years this morning. DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach says the Senate is taking a reasonable approach when it comes to spending the projected $1.9 billion budget surplus.
We're going to spend less than the governor spends. We're going to cut taxes less than the House is. And we're going to put more money into the budget reserve than the House.
The Senate plan puts $250 million into the budget reserve. It adds $350 million to schools, more than $200 million to higher education, and $341 million into health and human services. Senate leaders say they also will make a series of one-time tax fixes. Governor Dayton wants to spend much of the surplus on education programs, including universal pre-K for four-year-olds. House Republicans are looking to give the entire surplus back in the form of an unspecified tax cut. The three sides have to reach a budget deal before the constitutional deadline to adjourn the session on May 18th. Officials with the St. Cloud School District say they have a plan to address allegations of racial discrimination made by Somali students. Last week, a few dozen, mostly Somali students, walked out of a St. Cloud high school in protest of what they called harassment by non-Somali students. District officials say they are in the beginning stages of calming tensions. Brant Williams has the story.
The first step is talking. That's what St. Cloud Area School District Superintendent Willie Jett says administrators, staff, and students are doing now. He says even though discussions about race and culture are complex, the district is committed to making sure they take place.
And so we started some of those kind of conversations last week a little bit, started some of it this week. And then the biggest thing for us is how to schedule that in the future and make it part of our practice.
Jett and school board chair Dennis Whipple also opened a dialogue with a group of Somali community leaders earlier this week. Jett called the discussion productive, and he says leaders expressed several main concerns, including the need for more teachers of color, addressing bullying, establishing better lines of communication between school officials and the community, and concerns that Somali students are being unfairly singled out for harsher discipline.
When you look at suspension data, it naturally points to students of color, Somali students, being disproportionate in terms of suspension rate. And so they were looking at, okay, can we analyze that? Can we look at that? Can we look at what our practices are? As it relates to suspensions.
Jett says school officials will take a look at what parents and students recommend and possibly turn them into policy changes down the road. Hassan Youssef is the chair of the task force, which met with school district officials this week. A former candidate for the St. Cloud School Board, Youssef has lived in St. Cloud since 2001. He says the top priority for the task force is diversifying school staff and better training to help staff relate to Somali students.
Mostly we are looking for the training because the people who are working there, they are not bad people. They are very competent, actually. But it is cultural misunderstanding and not aware of the right of others. All this bring in things which are not good.
Senior Nastaho Dini says she organized last week's walkout because the district didn't immediately respond to a Snapchat photo taken by a classmate and captioned to suggest that a Somali student was a member of a terrorist group. Dini says that was just one instance of harassment that school officials seemed reluctant to address.
They said that they already know that we're not being treated equally. I mean, if you already know, then can you please do something about it? Because we're being harassed every single day.
This is not the first time St. Cloud school officials have had to address allegations of anti-Somali sentiments in the schools. After a complaint was filed with the Federal Civil Rights Department of similar activity 7 years ago, the department recommended several policy changes for the district to complete before 2012. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Cloud.
New federal rules set to take effect next month could make union organizing easier. But business groups are suing to block the new rules, saying they give organized labor the upper hand. Matt Sepik reports.
Last summer, the Service Employees International Union won the biggest victory in decades for Minnesota's labor movement when it won the right to represent 27,000 home health workers across the state. Today, SEIU healthcare organizer Eric Salmanen is focusing his efforts on unionizing workers in hospitals and nursing homes. New rules from the National Labor Relations Board could make Salmanen's job easier. Among other things, they delay most employer challenges to a union election petition until after workers have actually voted on joining a union. Salmanen says that'll make it harder for employers to file what he says are frivolous claims.
It's very common for management to try to tie the whole process up and file a lot of different objections, even if none of them go through, which can hold off an election by months, sometimes years.
Another key change is that employers have just 7 days to file paperwork with the NLRB outlining any objections to a unionization request from workers. Management must also send the board a list of employees eligible to vote in a union election, including their job classifications and work locations. The NLRB says the rules are meant to streamline the process and make it more consistent. Under the old system, the agency says neither unions nor management could predict when a vote to unionize would be held because individual NLRB offices handled things differently. Marlon Ostis oversees union elections across the Upper Midwest as the National Labor Relations Board's Minneapolis-based regional director. Ostis says the changes are the most significant he's seen in his 38 years at the agency, and he says they'll speed up the process of scheduling a vote in cases where someone seeks union representation.
We're going to have to focus on representation cases when they come in much more quickly, get the parties to focus on them right after they're filed, and hopefully reach election agreements in terms of when elections will be held and who will be voting. And all that's going to be more compressed.
With union membership on the decline for decades, labor groups like the expedited process. But Jim Plunkett with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says it allows unions to hold what he calls ambush elections. Today, the NLRB says unionization votes are held a median 38 days after workers file a petition. Plunkett, who's director of labor policy for the business lobbying group, says with the new rules, those votes could come in less than 2 weeks. And he says that's not nearly enough time for employers to respond and make their case to workers.
The rule here really is a solution in search of a problem and would dramatically tilt the playing field, and what we think should be a neutral playing field would tilt it dramatically in favor of union organizers.
Plunkett says small employers without HR departments and labor lawyers would be at a particular disadvantage. John Remington, a University of Minnesota labor relations expert, says expedited elections might boost unions' chances of winning a vote, but Remington says don't expect a surge of organizing.
This is not a silver bullet for the survival of the labor movement.
Remington says the new union election regulations came at the behest of the Democratic majority on the National Labor Relations Board. He says things could change easily if more Republicans are appointed.
I wouldn't be surprised if a Republican administration appointed a board majority that would attempt to overturn a lot of these things very dramatically.
The new union election rules are scheduled to take effect April 14th, but they face a more immediate challenge. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and several other business organizations have filed federal lawsuits seeking to block the regulations. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I will see you back here again next week.